He's equal in suffering and happiness. He's patient. He's always fully satisfied, and his self is controlled. Self-controlled. He has firm resolve, firm determination that he can succeed in serving Krishna. His mind and his intelligence are focused on me, Krishna says. His love is offered to me. That one is dearly loved by me. And this goes on for another 5 or 6 verses. There's so many qualities of a devotee listed by Krishna. So this kind of person is particularly dear to the Lord. Although anyone can qualify to become loved by the Lord. He actually loves the living entities. That's why he speaks the Bhagavad Gita, to teach us how to live. In another place in Bhagavad Gita, he describes what he wants Arjuna to do early in the 3rd chapter, when he's describing how to act in yoga. He says, Maya Sarvani Karmani, surrender all your works unto me. With full knowledge of me, and without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship. But then he points out in the following verse that some people are envious of this teaching, and they disregard Krishna's teaching and don't follow it. And therefore, Krishna says they get in trouble. They become befooled by the world. They become fools in this world, befooled by the world. Vimudha. And ruined, Krishna uses the word nashtan. Nashtana chetasa. Without Krishna consciousness, they're all ruined. Because they don't act according to Krishna's injunction. They don't follow Krishna's teaching faithfully. They envy him. Many people are envious of Krishna, because he says, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And nothing is equal to me. Nothing is greater than me. So people feel envious of Krishna because he says that. Many people envy him because he is the Supreme. And this envy is expressed in various ways. It's described by Srila Prabhupada. People want to feel independent. They declare their independence in various ways. I don't need God. Or we're an independent nation. The best thing is to declare your dependence on God. So, like in America, they did do that. They said, we're an independent nation, independent of England, but we're dependent on God. Also, and they said, so that's good. That kind of personalism, that we're persons, but we're subordinate persons. We're subordinate to the Supreme Person. He's supplying us our necessities of life. Without him, we're not going to be happy. We're not going to succeed or have prosperity. And that's Prabhupada's point, too, in the purport. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord. Because our position is to become subordinate to the Lord's desires. So Arjuna was ordered by Krishna to fight. That was the Lord's desire. And Arjuna was supposed to just discharge his duty. And not take too much his personal considerations into mind. He wanted to consider, well, what about my family? What about the kingdom? The kingdom won't be enjoyable if all my relatives are dead. So this caused Arjuna to hesitate, to be in a sort of ignorant state of mind. This family or bodily relationship. Srila Prabhupada uses the example of the cashier in the bank. He can count millions of dollars for his employer. Any cashier, not just a bank cashier, any cashier can count all the money that belongs to the company, but he doesn't claim that that's his money. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. So many people don't want to accept this. They don't want to fully recognize Krishna, fully know Krishna. So that's enviousness or ignorance. They want to ignore God. Envy comes out in other ways also. Sometimes people know about Krishna, but still they're envious. And they use the Bhagavad Gita, they use Krishna's teachings to mislead people, to derive some message or teaching that isn't according to Krishna's desire. There are many, many editions of Bhagavad Gita. So why are there so many? Why do people go on translating the Bhagavad Gita? Because they have some idea of their own that they want to teach others. They want the prestige of the Bhagavad Gita. They want to use Krishna's prestige for their own sake, to teach what they think is spiritual. So Prabhupada took note of them also and said that sometimes out of envy they comment on the Bhagavad Gita. Then Prabhupada pointed out also some of the persons who accept the Vedas. They accept Krishna's teachings. It appears that they're following the Vedas, but they're not devotees. They just follow the Vedas to be a member of a particular caste, or maybe to get some promotion in the next life. So they're not really devotees of Krishna either. They're also envious, even though they're part of Vedic culture. And then there are those who say, I am a devotee. They pose as devotees. They wear the clothes of devotees, the neck beads, the tilak. But they don't engage in Krishna's service, Prabhupada said. That's also a symptom of envy. Yes, we're devotees of Krishna. But then will you serve Krishna? What kinds of devotional service are you doing? So we can see that there are many shades of envy, and also that we are susceptible to them. As we become devotees, as we learn about Krishna, until our knowledge of Krishna is complete, until we've perfected our qualities, the devotional qualities, we won't be like Prahlad Maharaj right away as soon as we become devotees. It takes years, years of devotional service to become a pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj. But we should endeavor for these qualities. I'll read a few more of the qualities in chapter 12. One who does not disturb others and who is not disturbed by the world, who's patient, free from fear and anxiety, that one is dearly loved by me. One who is pure and capable, detached, free from anxiety, who offers his love to me, he's dearly loved by me. One who neither laments nor desires. A person gives up the desires that arise from the mind. Krishna appreciates that we control the mind. The mind will have so many ideas. So we have to give up trying to fulfill all those desires of the mind. Krishna appreciates that. One who is filled with offerings of love is dearly loved by me. We have to engage in offering our heart to Krishna. It's a heart-to-heart relationship. This love, Krishna Prema. One who is the same toward an enemy or a friend, who's the same in honor and dishonor, who's the same in cold and heat, happiness and suffering, who's free from attachment, one for whom blame and praise are equal, who's disciplined in speech, who's satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. Such a person is dearly loved by me. This idea that one should be satisfied with what comes of its own accord it takes into account our karma. According to our activities in a previous life, we get things like happiness or distress or gain or loss. So if one's satisfied with what's going to come of its own accord, according to our past activities, and doesn't adopt another platform for economic advancement, he's dear to Krishna. So many economists or politicians will tell you, you should work hard and earn money, get a job, earn money, and then spend the money and be happy. That's what life is all about. You know, you work and pay bills and enjoy the happiness that comes from owning so many things. This is done out of envy. We envy so many people and what they have, so we try also to get what they have. We work hard thinking, I'll get that, I'll get this. Why shouldn't I have a Rolls Royce or a Mercedes Benz? Why shouldn't I have an iPad? And so we're motivated by envy and greed, and that's not good. Krishna doesn't appreciate that. People are envious of the cows. It's mentioned one who's envious of the cows will be vanquished without delay. Enviousness of the cows is expressed in killing the cows, denying that peaceful grass eater. He just wants to chew the grass in the pasture, and you come along and kill the cow. Very bad. So for this kind of person, his civilization will be vanquished without delay, it's said. And one who's envious of the demigods, also this is just the opposite of what Krishna recommends. He says one of the austerities of the body is to offer respect to persons who deserve respect, and that includes the demigods, the devas. And there's a whole principle there, the principle of divinity, deva. That's Krishna's the deva-deva. He's the lord of the demigods, deva-deva. But along with Krishna, there are these other divinities or demigods, although they're divine only in the sense that they function on behalf of the Supreme Person. They have a temporary position. And there's an aggregate of devas, and they make up the cosmic government. So they're to be respected. That's an austerity of the body that Krishna recommends, to respect his representatives, the demigods, who are helping him by taking care of the natural elements like fire and light and water. The demigods, even at the, Krishna mentions that at the time of death, the demigods sometimes are involved helping the soul who's leaving the body go out of the world. He describes a path in which the soul reaches the places of the demigods, and the demigods assist him in going out of the world. Of course, a devotee doesn't have to worry about that. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also that he is Skanda. Skanda is the son of Lord Shiva, who is the lord of war. In the West, we have Mars. Mars is considered the lord of war. Krishna also says he's the chief demigod, Indra. Among the demigods, I'm Indra, the chief. So he's the king of heaven. He's the person in charge of the rain. In the West, or in other cultures, the Oriental cultures, this is also known. In Chinese culture, the king, each spring, would go to the Temple of Heaven. You can still go to Beijing and see the Temple of Heaven. It's preserved as a, now it's a cultural or tourist attraction. You can visit the Temple of Heaven. That's where the king, the emperor of China, used to go in the spring to offer sacrifices to the king of heaven. Why? Because the people needed rain for their crops to grow. So the emperor, this was a Vedic function also in India, the emperor was responsible for the seasons being regulated, producing rain, so that the people could grow food. This yajna is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna establishes yajna. So sometimes people are envious of the demigods. Once I distributed books in London, and the young lady came along and said, "I don't want your book. I'm not going to take it because you worship demigods." She knew about us. She had seen our books or heard about our books that mention the demigods. So anybody who picks up one of Prabhupada's books, he'll soon read about the demigods. And from the Christian point of view, this is a kind of blasphemy. It's considered polytheism to believe in more than one god. But there's also other reasons why people might feel that the demigods can just be disrespected. We don't have to pay attention to them anymore. In Western society, Western culture, people believed in the demigods several thousand years ago, a couple of thousand years ago. The Greeks and the Romans worshipped demigods. I was in Athens not so long ago, a couple of years ago, and I visited the Parthenon. The Parthenon is dedicated to the goddess Athena. Parthenos, the word Parthenos means virgin. Athena was a virgin, but she was also a warrior goddess. And she helped the Athenians in their battles. She was also the goddess of art and creativity. So because of the relationship with the demigods, the Athenians obeyed the rules of the city. They took it that living as an obedient citizen of Athens was a way of pleasing Athena. They built a very nice temple to her. The best architects planned this temple. It's still regarded as a symbol of the glory of classical Greece because it was so beautiful. There's so many aesthetic principles employed in the building of that temple. And in Rome, if you visit Rome, I have, you can see the Pantheon. That's one round building, circular building. And the roof is supported simply by the circumference of the building. The roof rests on the circumference of the building. There's no pillars inside. And there are various shrines for the demigods in Rome. But the Christians later replaced all those demigods with Catholic objects of veneration, Saint Mary or Jesus or the saints. So that's also a kind of envy, that you would stop the paying attention to the demigods. At some point it's regarded as the wrong thing to do, and you can get in trouble. So these are some examples of disrespecting the demigods or not paying attention to them. And we've talked about envy of the cows, envy of devotees, and envy of the teachings of Krishna. So all of these things get us in trouble, and we face the loss, the ruin of everything if we act in that way. Maybe there are some questions, comments. Are you raising your hand back there? Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a great class. I was just wondering if you could give an example of bona fide austerity of the body to honor the demigods.
What's a bona fide austerity? By which to honor the demigods. For a Vaishnava, it's just worshipping or serving Krishna. You don't have to separately endeavor for that, because the demigods are included as part of the Supreme Person. He's the Purush, and the limbs of the Purush are considered to be the demigods, the parts of his body. They act like our hands act on behalf of the body. The demigods are meant to act on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So they're satisfied when we're serving Krishna. That's enough. But we have also the example of Lord Chaitanya. When you go on pilgrimage, as Lord Chaitanya did in South India, you can visit the temples of the demigods. Lord Chaitanya did that. He would go to the temple of Shiva out of respect. And we have verses in the Brahma Samhita that we chant, also mention the demigods. The sun god is mentioned in this verse. Yat chakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta suramurtir asesate jajas yagnaya brahmti sambitkala chakro govindamari purusham tamam bhajami. So there the sun god is described as the eye of the Lord. Prabhupada mentioned that yesterday in his talk. He sees everything. God is present through the demigods. He's present through the light of the sun, the light of the moon. He can see what you're doing. And the sun is important because it supplies so much heat and light. It sustains all the other planets. And he's acting under the order of Govinda. And then other demigods are described in the Brahma Samhita, their relation to Krishna.
Thank you, sir, for a great class. I was just wondering, in the beginning of the class, you talked about offenses towards devotees.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you could just highlight main ones to guard against.
If I could highlight what?
Main offenses against devotees to guard against.
Okay. Some of the Vaishnava Parads. There's some overlap between the offenses to devotees and offenses to the holy name. Two of the offenses of the holy name apply to Vaishnavas. One shouldn't blaspheme devotees. That means saying something against a devotee that would diminish the faith that people have in him. If he's trying to teach others about Krishna and chanting, then if you say something that's critical in such a way that breaks the faith of the person, that's not good. You shouldn't also disobey the orders of the spiritual master. That's an offense against the holy name. Also offense against the spiritual master. If you promise the spiritual master to obey his orders, then you have to act like a gentleman and obey. Or to the offense of committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting. Again, the spiritual master says, give up your sinful activities. Do you promise? And you say, yes, I promise. And then if you go on, then he may forgive you once or twice. But if you really act in an envious way and calculate, how can I go on with my sinful activities? Envy of the spiritual master. And then, of course, Hiranyakasipu exemplified also Vaishnava Aparadha. He tried to kill his own son many times. So violence against the devotee, or even teasing a devotee, the word is used in today's verse. The Lord says, when Hiranyakasipu teases his devotee, Prahlad, I will appear and kill him. Yes, Prabhu?
These devotees, is that mean then we should be very careful not to make jokes with devotees, make some fun with them? We should be very careful. Can you say a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. What about joking with devotees? Should we be very, very careful that our jokes are not offensive, yes. Joking in the proper way will increase the nice relationships between devotees. But if you joke in such a way as to diminish a devotee, make him feel terrible, then Krishna may consider, oh, you're being offensive. This is Vaishnava Aparadha. And so I'll take away your opulences. I'll take away whatever opulences you have. Okay, we can stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Somebody's in the Greek church.